compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Right, and I'll bring all my shoes and my glasses with me, so I have them.
Good idea. Hey, welcome back. 888-914-9149. That's sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, 888-914-9149. And email patrick@relevantradio.com. Plenty of those. I got a note here. This is from Jorge. He says, I don't know if you remember, I called last week about my father-in-law in the hospital. Well, I wanted to inform you that he passed away the following day, Friday. We are very saddened, but he is no longer suffering. And also, he passed on the weekend of Divine Mercy Sunday, so my wife and I were able to do all the requirements for the plenary indulgence. His funeral services and mass will be next week. Please pray for our family. Thank you, and have a blessed day. Love the show, he says. And he says his wife and he listen daily. Thank you for all that. And Jorge, my sincere condolences to you and your family. I have not been through yet. Eventually I will, but I haven't been through the loss of a parent yet. So I don't know what it feels like to go through what you're going through, but I'm sure it's painful. And you can be assured of my prayers during the grieving process and also prayers for the repose of the soul of your father-in-law. That's one thing I think I'd like to underscore here in light of your email, and that is, folks, if you know somebody who dies, you don't even have to know them. You could just know of them. Don't neglect to pray for the repose of their soul. What does that mean? That means that if it should happen that they died in the state of grace, which we hope, and they're destined for heaven, that they may have to experience some purification in purgatory. Is the word purgatory in the Bible? No, nor is the word Trinity. The doctrine is seen in the Bible. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning in verse 10, is a good place to begin. It's not the only one. There are many other passages that allude to or speak about purgatory without using the name. But the point being is, when the soul passes into eternity, if the soul is in purgatory, it needs your help. So prayers, offering masses, praying the rosary, things of that nature, offering an indulgence, for example, are all beneficial to the soul so that it can leave that state of purification that St. Paul talks about as being purged with fire. He says in 1 Corinthians 3, the evil works, the bad works of his life are burned up like wood, hay, and straw. And he says this man who's undergoing this is suffering. He will be saved. He's not there yet. He will be saved, but only as though passing through fire. How would you like to have to pass through fire? I wouldn't. And in the Bible, it talks about this kind of purifying fire that is not, it doesn't have the same effect on the soul that the endless fire, the unquenchable fire that Jesus talks about in hell. But in this case, for the soul of somebody who has died, it is God's fiery love purifying the person from all those things that are incompatible with an all-holy God. As it says in Revelation 21:27, nothing unclean can enter heaven. So to the extent that there are any of those blemishes or scars, however you want to use analogies to think about them, these are for sins that have been forgiven. Obviously, only the Lord Jesus Christ can pay for the eternal penalty due to sin, which would be hell. Only he can do that. There's one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus, as the Bible says. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the effects of sin and also restitution, etc. So that's why when you have a loved one or a friend or somebody who dies, it's so important that you pray for that person and keep praying for that person. You may say, well, how long do I have to pray? Well, pray for the rest of your life. Because if the person winds up going to heaven much sooner than you think, your prayers are not wasted. God will apply those prayers to other souls in purgatory, who, by the way, will remember you when they get to heaven. And if it should happen that you find yourself in purgatory, they will not have forgotten you. They will be praying for you. So win-win on that level. And the other thing is, if the person is still in purgatory, then your prayers benefit him or her. So be thinking about that. We never like to ponder people passing away, but it's an important reality. Let's go to Terrence in South Portland, Maine. Good morning, Terrence.
Well, that was fast. Patrick, I'm calling you because a broadcast of a week or so ago, maybe you were speaking with a woman, I believe, and you were talking about the need for Catholics to marry within the church in, you know, as in witnessed by a priest, deacon, or bishop,
right.
Because being Catholic, any person who is a Catholic has to marry within the church. And in a sense, I wanted to find out what that the date of that broadcast was. And the reason for that was to send it to nephews and a niece in my family. Okay. That was part of it, or maybe if you could expand on it a little bit, even for my benefit as well.
Sure.
This is this has to be an enormous concern within the Catholic Church. I mean, I've heard a lot.
It is a big problem. Yeah, it is a big problem.
Yeah.
Okay, I will. I'll take a run at that, Terrence. Before I do, though, so that I don't forget, if you are interested, I will ask young Thomas to see if he can't locate that show for you. And if when we're done talking, if you don't hang up, he'll pick up with you and get your email address, and then he can find it and then send you a link to that. So
okay,
added bonus. I'd like to also say right up front, I am not a canon lawyer. This is a canon law issue. I am not a canon lawyer, but I've tried to be diligent in reading what canon lawyers have to say on this topic, not to mention canon law itself, so that I can at least articulate what the church says on this issue. So here goes. The institution of marriage is natural insofar as God established it in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, as Jesus talks about in Matthew 19, beginning in verse 1. In the beginning, he made them male and female, he says. And this is why a man leaves his parents and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh. And what God has joined together, let no one put asunder. So as a biblical paradigm, it's important for us to recognize that marriage as such is a good and, we could say holy in a qualified sense, institution for all men and women who are eligible to get married. This is atheists, Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims, you know, not quite sure what they are. Everybody, every man and woman who's eligible to get married to each other, they have a right to do this. And it's good in itself that they get married, whether in front of a justice of the peace or if they have a religious ceremony or, you know, the captain of a ship marries them. Those are superfluous issues. The church recognizes or presumes the validity of their marriages. This is not the case, however, for a Catholic. Now, by Catholic here, we're referring to if you're baptized, and even more so if you've received your sacraments of initiation. So you've been baptized, confirmed, received your first Holy Communion. You're a fully initiated Catholic. I don't mean you personally, Terrence, but you rhetorically. So here is where this all changes, because the Catholic has, by virtue of his membership in the church, not only rights and privileges, but also duties. And the church's law says that in order for the marriage of a Catholic, either to a non-Catholic party who's baptized or to another Catholic, that the canonical form, that's referring to the church's law, must be observed outside of some really unusual circumstance or outside of a situation where his bishop grants him a dispensation. And that can be done. Bishops can do that. But assuming that that wasn't requested, and assuming that it's not some unusual situation like the priest can't visit this area for the next 5 years, in a normal situation, if the Catholic or both Catholics want to be validly married, they must be married in a Catholic church and have the marriage witnessed and blessed by a Catholic bishop, priest, or deacon. When the canonical form is not present or wasn't observed, then the church says, ipso facto, that's an invalid marriage, because in order for it to be valid, the Catholic party must do these couple of things. It's not moving heaven and earth, but that's necessary for validity. Now, the issue of the marriage being a sacrament is separate from that. But for the moment, what we're talking about here is that the young Catholic man or woman who's planning to get married may not know this, may never have heard this. And so with perhaps just a misguided ignorance, but well-intentioned ignorance, doesn't realize if I get married at the bowling alley or the Texaco station or the country club and I don't have a dispensation from the bishop and there is no bishop, priest, or deacon there to witness and bless the marriage, this is an invalid marriage, which is why my parents are saying they won't attend. And lots of hearts get broken and feelings get hurt and things like that. So I have read from some canon lawyers who are experts in the field that they are hoping and maybe even lobbying behind the scenes, for all I know, that the church would change this law. It didn't used to be this way. And one of the reasons that the church implemented this law, however far back it was, I don't know if it was prior to the 1917 code or not, but the main thing is there were women, for example, who were being jilted by a man who, quote unquote, married them, but it was a clandestine marriage. And there was no priest there to bless the marriage. There were witnesses or whatever, but there was no way that the church could know for sure if they had ever really been married. So you have situations where young women were married, and then the guy skips town because he's, you know, shipping back out to sea, or he's going back to war, or he just is moving to a different place, and she has no way to prove that she was married. And what if she was pregnant? Things like that. So there were reasons why the church thought this would be helpful to prevent a proliferation of invalid marriages. But according to some of the canon lawyers I've read, their impression is that it actually has had the opposite effect, where we now have a vast number of objectively invalid marriages because of this requirement, and many people didn't even know about it. So I have no say in the matter, Terrence, and I'll throw it back to you. I have no say in the matter, but as I read things, it seems to me that this is one of those aspects of the church's law that could well change. It hasn't changed yet, so it's still in force. We have to observe it, but it could solve some problems and maybe create other problems as well. But for the moment, that's where things stand. I'll leave it at that. Does that help?
It does. But it also dovetails with something that came from maybe my last phone call to you last fall. And it involved, at that time, my one surviving aunt. And she has since passed. In fact, she died shortly after that. Okay. And she was born in Japan. But she actually became a Christian in marrying my uncle, Tom.
Okay.
My father's family.
Was she a war bride, something like that, World War II or something?
After World War II, yeah. Okay. And actually, to talk about that was controversy within the family growing up, okay? Mm-hmm. But the thing specifically, what you had said, and it was my question at that time, was how did the Japanese Catholics retain the faith? And you mentioned marriage and baptism. And right. To think of what you just said, which I didn't know of, the fact that a priest, deacon, or bishop had to be present. And then the
makes you wonder about
those,
that.
Yeah.
I can unwind that for you. Okay. The answer is actually easier than one might imagine. So the first thing is that the church says that every man and woman who is eligible, who are eligible to marry each other, have a right mm-hmm. to get married. And that mm-hmm. right is not trampled upon if, in the case of two Catholics, this is what I was talking about earlier about extreme circumstances. So let's say, you know, the shogun has now outlawed Christianity. No priest can come in, no deacons, no priests, no bishops, nobody can do this. The church foresees situations like that and says that their marriage is indeed valid. And when, if the couple is able to have their marriage blessed by a priest, deacon, or bishop, then they would have an obligation to seek to do so. But their marriage would be valid and it would be holy in the eyes of the Lord by virtue of the fact that it's the husband who gives the sacrament to his wife, the wife gives the sacrament to her husband. The bishop, priest, or deacon is there to witness this in the eyes of the church, or in the, you might say, as a personification of the church, and to bless it. But in situations where that's not possible, the couple can still get married in a clear conscience. Okay, so that's the first part. Second part is, and this is something that I'd have to double check with a canon lawyer, but I think I'm right on this, and that is that this provision for the canonical form did not exist in the 1600s. It didn't exist during the time where the shoguns had shut everything down. And for 300 plus years, these underground Catholics were surviving with baptism and marriage. They were not obligated under that provision in any case.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a double solution.
It does. And it follows right up on something I heard you speak of in the last day or two about the possibility. When someone has the possibility.
Of what?
That's when it's required. Well, a possibility of the whatever the sacrament, you know, baptism. Oh, it was like talking about baptism of desire with the good thief. And
oh, I see what you mean. That. I see. Yeah. So in other words, yeah, now I get it. So if it's possible for you to do, so for example, to be baptized, and you don't, well, then you're bound by that that obligation to be baptized, and it's your fault. If it is your fault, it's your fault. But if through no fault of your own, you just can't get baptized, or you can't receive the Holy Eucharist, or you can't be married according to the Church's canonical form because of the things we just discussed, those would be extenuating circumstances where that obligation wouldn't apply to you in that case. That's what you're referring to, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, these are good things. I have a book. Well, it's not my book, but I can recommend a book that I think you'll find very helpful if you're interested.
Okay.
The first one is called The Sacraments and Their Celebration by Father Nicholas Halligan, OP. It's a great one-volume overview, not just of the Church's sacramental theology, but also the law as it pertains to each of the sacraments. And the other one is by a canon lawyer. His name is Ed Peters, and it's a book, Answers to Your Questions on Annulments and Remarriage. And there are a lot of questions that are not directly involved with this, but many of the ones in that book are. I think you'll find either or both of those helpful, Terrence. Thanks. I'll be right back. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com.
Haddly diddly.
Yo, what up, everybody? Just stopping by to drop some more wisdom on y'all. Now I got to hit you with some real talk.
Ugh, it was that darn recording again.
Of course it was. It's been calling all night. Just unplug the phone.
Adley.
And if you have kids or you're just trying to get through life as a good person, you're sitting on a resource that's rightfully yours and will help you and your family.
Bang!
I told you to unplug the phone.
But it could be my mother. Howdy.
Don't miss out on this golden opportunity. Slide on over to the Relevant Radio app and start listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. Let your friends and family know how I sent you.
Shoot!
That is it, Ned. If you don't unplug that phone right now, you're sleeping on the lawn.
Download the Relevant Radio app. They got my stamp of approval, baby.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right. You do good work, Cyrus. What can I say? Well done.
Having fun.
Who was that guy?
I have no idea who that was. No idea.
Man, those robocallers. That was a good one, though.
I mean, that was a good one.
He gave some good info.
Very good info.
Let's see. 888-914-9149. We'll get you on the air with your comment, your question. Here's a note that comes in from Sandra. Now, this is not going to be a topic for children. For obvious reasons, when I say this, you'll understand why. So, parents, if you have children at present listening right now in Houston, California, or Traverse City, Michigan, or some other place where I know there's a whole bunch of kids listening, just turn the radio down for a few minutes, not too many, and if necessary, shoo them in the other room. Let them play with Play-Doh or something like that. So fair warning, ready, steady, go. Okay. So this note comes in from Sandra, says, I need your advice. How and at what age did you and your wife initiate the topic of sexuality, specifically regarding procreation and marriage, with each of your children? Our boys are 9 and 11. Do you recommend my do you recommend my husband take the reins on this, or should both of us be present? Personally, I don't see it as a problem if I, being a woman, speak to them about this topic. My husband tells me it's far better that he, as a man, a father, have this conversation with them. What do you think? Great question, Sandra, and happy to answer it for you. So I'll take it in reverse order. I agree with your husband, and I think he's wise to want to have this conversation with the boys, at least initially, and not with the 9-year-old. I'll come back to that issue. 11, yeah, I think that's unfortunately right around the age where it's necessary to have the talk. 9-year-olds, not so much. I wish that it were not so young, but just in society that we live in right now, and if they're in public school, they've certainly been faced with this. Certainly the 11-year-old has. And even if they're in Catholic school, you know, kids on the playground talk and taunt each other and say things like that. They don't always know what it is they're talking about, but they say things that they hear elsewhere. So unfortunately, yes, I think the 11-year-old is definitely at that age now where it's appropriate. But as to your question, I think your husband is wise because there are two things I would say keep in mind. Number one, because of the nature of the topic itself, and because you are mom, you are a woman, you don't want to run the risk of creating an environment when the talk happens that the son is not, doesn't feel free or comfortable to ask questions. Now, sons don't always ask questions, but sometimes they do. And I just think my sense is that if you were there as mom, it would complicate matters and it could make it even more, it could make a difficult situation even more difficult for that reason. The second reason is because of the nature of the topic that your husband as a father, as a husband, he is the right person for them to learn these things from. Now, if down the road you want to have a family discussion later or something, I mean, who am I to discourage that if you think it's the best thing to do? Who am I to discourage that? But I would strongly encourage that you follow your husband's lead on this issue and let him take the reins and let him have at least the initial talk or two. So as to your first question, how and at what age did we do this? Well, my wife handled this directly with all of our daughters. So we have 6 sons and 5 daughters. They're all grown up now. My oldest son now has a married daughter. So we have 29 grandchildren. We just found out number 29 is on the way. So looking, kind of surveying how all that played out, what I can tell you is that at about that age, at about 11, and it might have varied up to the age of 12 in the case of one or two of our sons, but I handled those talks with the sons. My wife handled those talks with the daughters. I was not present for the talks that she had with the daughters. She was not present with the talks I had with our sons. So that's the age. Now, how did we do it? So I really don't remember how Nancy did it, but I can tell you how I did it. So I would say to my son, because I love doing long walks, and one place, like when our oldest son was about 11 years old, one place that was really a beautiful place to walk was this old cemetery. And it had beautiful headstones and huge shady trees. And it was just a very peaceful, picturesque, lovely place. And I enjoyed all the time walking in the cemetery because, you know, there's no traffic and you're by yourself and it's a huge area. So it's a perfect place to walk. So I just said to my son, hey, I'm going on a walk and I'd like you to go with me. He's like, okay, sure. So we went on this walk. And so I gave the talk 2 times, but in 2 stages. So the first part of the talk was, hey, isn't it great? You know, you're 11 years old, 12, and pretty soon, you know, you're going to start becoming a man. And, you know, talk about how great it is when your voice gets deeper and you're going to start growing hair on your lip like a mustache like dad has. And you're going to build muscle and you're going to be more, you know, you're going to turn into a man. It doesn't happen all at once, but it happens. And you're at the point now where it's going to start happening. So my reason for going into this is to build him up and to underscore how good it is that your body is changing. This is good. This is not something to be afraid of. This is not something to be embarrassed about. This is good because God has designed the human body in such a way that, guess what? When you become a man, you'll be able to be like me. You'll be able to be a husband. You'll be able to be a father. Someday you'll have your own kids. Won't that be great? So in other words, lots of positive reinforcement and giving explanations at the sort of natural physiological level so he won't fear the changes that come with puberty. And most of the conversation was simply at that level. It was this pep talk. And how long did it last? I don't remember. Half an hour, maybe, something like that. And he may have had a few questions, you know, well, why do you get an Adam's apple, Dad? What does that mean? You know, and so you do the best you can. You explain those physiological things. And I think at that, in that, toward the end of that talk, I also said, and there's, you know what, there's some other things that are part of this bigger picture, part of this big, wonderful change that's going on in your life right now. And I'm going to share those with you too, but we don't have time to do it right now. So do you have any questions right now? Do you have any, you know, are you wondering about bodily changes and what they mean or anything? And, you know, we would talk about that. Then the second part of the talk was another walk. And as I recall, I believe it was in the same place. And we had another long walk and we're just talking about this, that, and the other, how school, what's going on. Oh, hey, by the way, I was thinking, I wanted to mention to you, it occurred to me. You remember when we were walking last time and we had the talk about how you're becoming a man and all that? Yeah, I remember that, yeah. So, you know, a few other things came to mind. And I told you I had a few other things I wanted to share with you. So let's talk about those now. And then just very matter-of-factly, I began to talk about procreation so that he had a foundation already there, already present, understanding that, as I had told him earlier, the reason your body changes is because you're becoming a man. The reason you're becoming a man is so that you can be a husband and a father. And then in the second talk, I talked about how does that happen? How does it happen that you find a woman that you love, you fall in love, you get married, and God blesses you with children? Well, how exactly does that happen? And then I would explain how that happens. And at that point now, there's going to be some natural embarrassment on your son's part. There will be some hesitance. You know, most kids, I think, generally, they have this sort of built-in modesty. And perhaps they've already heard things and they feel a little bit unsure. But this is why I say, let your husband do this, because he understands, even just instinctively, what it's like to be an 11-year-old boy. And he will understand and he will know how to guide the conversation in a very good way so that when it's all said and done, the son won't be embarrassed. He won't be wondering, well, you know, how does this work? How does that work? And he'll also know that if he has any questions, he can talk to his dad, because his dad is going to say, you know what, if you have any questions, feel free to ask me. This is an open topic. If ever you're wondering or you're confused or you hear something weird at school or somebody says this, please never feel embarrassed to come to me and talk to me, because I love you. And I'm so excited and happy that you're growing up to be a fine young man. And I want to do everything I can to help you. So I'll leave it at that.
You know, you gave me this advice about 5-6 years ago, and I took it. And I took my son for a walk. And
let me hear about this. I want to hear how it went.
So we had the talk, and it went. There was a lot of this going on.
And not coming from you, I guess. Right?
I was one of those laughs, yeah. But so the talk was pretty funny. Like there was definitely some humor and laughing involved, but I knew they were going to talk about this in school. Like I had gotten the letter from the school. It's like, hey, we're going to have the video and the talk and here are the things that are being covered. And I'm looking at this list. I'm like, man, he's too young for this, but it's going to happen. And if I take him out, all of his friends are going to hear about it. And then he's going to hear about it secondhand through his friends. And none of that info is going to be worth anything.
Yeah, because a lot of that's going to be wrong anyway.
Big time.
Or to be distorted.
You know it. And so I did take him for a walk, just like he suggested, and it worked out really well because then I had his undivided attention for 30 minutes. I wasn't afraid to have fun. You know, we did let some things that happen are pretty funny. So we had a sense of humor about it. And I think it went really well.
That's awesome.
So thank you for the good advice.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, and now that you went through that process, wouldn't you say that that's the right way to do it in general? Like if you had to give
a suggestion
to your friends or something?
Definitely. If my son ever asked me, hey, what did we do? You know, if he forgot, I'd be like, oh, take your kid for a walk. Like if when he's a dad and many, many years in the future, I would give him the same advice. And what you said about Nancy, we did the same thing where Melanie was responsible for the talk with the girls.
Right. Let's put it this way. If you had been there for that talk, it would have been a different kind of talk, right? Because your daughters probably would never have been comfortable talking about this with their father, a man there, right?
Definitely not. Definitely not. And you should have the talk with your kids, because if they don't hear it from you, they're going to hear it from the television or from TikTok. Mm-hmm. Or from
music
their friends.
Videos.
Music
videos.
Right. They're going, just like you did, they're going to learn about it. Don't forget what it's like to be a little kid.
That is so true. I'm really glad you chimed in on that, Cyrus, because it's good to know kind of firsthand how using that paradigm actually works out. Now, I'm curious, did you do the two phase, the two talks back to back, or did you do everything in one talk?
We did most of it in one talk, and then he had his school thing a couple of days later, and then we talked again about what he learned in the school. So yes and no to that, I guess.
Yeah. So in a way, it kind of worked out. Not that you had to do it in two stages, obviously, but it sort of was natural to do that because you were maybe deprogramming him a little bit after what he learned in
definitely.
School.
Definitely. One of the things I was telling him is like one of the reasons why we were laughing and having so much fun with it is like, don't be that kid. Don't be that kid in class who can't contain the information coming in and you just start laughing or making a fool out of yourself. Don't make it a joke. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's serious, but it's not right. The end of the world. Nothing bad is happening to you when you change. I think, you know, just on the heels of what you just said, Cyrus, I think that is probably for many kids the most difficult thing is when your body starts changing and you don't know why. And you don't understand, you know, why is this happening? Why is that happening? And there's no good adult father figure or father or mother there to guide you. You're going to be guided, rightly or wrongly, by the kids that you associate with.
Yeah, and I think it's even worse for girls to not have the talk from their mom.
Oh, yeah.
Because how frightening would that be?
I don't remember the exact circumstances, but I do remember being informed by I didn't go to school with her, but it must have been in adulthood. But the bodily changes that take place for a girl happened suddenly without warning. She had no idea what was going on. Her mother never told her anything or what to expect or anything. And she was actually kind of traumatized by it because she was terrified at not understanding what was happening. And that kind of stuck in my mind, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's important that we give our children wholesome, chaste, virtuous-based or virtue-based explanation of these topics so that not only will they know and not be taken by surprise, but also that they won't get warped by the sometimes ridiculous things that their playmates will say.
Yeah.
Well, very good.
Yeah, and it's that mom probably was embarrassed, or she's like, I don't want to have the, you know, she'll figure
maybe,
it out.
Or maybe negligent.
Or thought, you know, I've got 6 more months, or I have a year till I need to worry about it. Mm-hmm. You don't really have that year. That range for everyone is pretty big. It's a few years.
That's true. Yeah, and it can depend upon, you know, your diet, your environment, medications. I suppose there are all sorts of things. But I'm glad you brought that up, Cyrus. I'm glad to hear that advice worked well for you. And I really do hope for the lady that sent me the note that that's something that if you do that, that you will look back on it later and say, yeah, that really worked out well. By the way, dads, I have to take a break, but there's a great book by Steve Wood, who's kind of a guru on fatherhood issues. Real good guy. I've known Steve for many years. He has a really good book called Legacy. And if you see, his website is dads.org, so you can check it out there, but you can get it at your local Catholic bookstore, Legacy by Steve Wood. If you're looking for some guidance, like how do I relate to my adolescent son? How do I instill good life lessons? How do I discipline properly? How do I avoid over-disciplining? How do I teach my son manly virtues? How do I teach him what does it mean to be a good young man? So that he doesn't wind up getting weird ideas from other people. I liked the book so much when he sent me the galley copy that I offered to write a blurb for the book. So you'll see my blurb on the back of the book. But I would check it out, dads, especially young dads. Or if you're a grandfather and you have a grandson coming up through the ranks, you want to give some support to your son or son-in-law, that would be a good gift for him. Legacy by Steve Wood. I'll be right back. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right. I'm in no rush to get to the emails, but I do have one here. It's pertinent to the last topic we just touched on. Then I'll go right to the phones. This is from Marie, listening on the Relevant Radio app. She just sent this to me. She says, what do you suggest about giving your son the talk if your husband does not share your beliefs, like waiting for marriage and other immoral acts? And she's referring there to masturbation. She says, I don't want my son being led astray, but also I don't want him to be uncomfortable hearing this from his mom. What do us moms do in this situation? Well, in your situation, if I hate to put it this way, but if your husband is not reliable, I mean, I hate to say that, but if he's not reliable and you can't count on him to do the right thing and give the right information in a virtue-based way, then yeah, I think it falls to you. And this actually is a good moment to just briefly pause and discuss this for a second. I have known a lot of people in my lifetime who, in one way or another, you know, sharing or whatnot, talk about how they were introduced to these issues, the issue of human sexuality. And on far more than one occasion, multiple occasions, I'll put it that way, guys have told me that they discovered their dad's pornography stash. And it not only devastated them in terms of their innocence and their own way of looking at women and marriage and family, et cetera, but it also devastated their understanding of and the way they could relate to their own father. So I just want to pause here only for a moment. I don't think I need to belabor the point, but because you wrote me this email, Marie, I feel obligated to mention something. And I want to speak directly to you fathers right now. Number one, if you are viewing pornography and all of the above, and you know what else happens when you view pornography, I don't need to say it because you already know. As a matter of fact, I already said it a moment ago. You're on the 8-lane superhighway to hell. And I don't want you to go to hell. You don't want to go to hell. Most of all, Jesus doesn't want you to go to hell. So stop doing that. Get rid of the porn. Back in the olden days, they were magazines. I don't know if those even exist anymore. Maybe they do. I don't know. But I mean, if you have it on your phone, if you have it on your laptop, in whatever room of the house you have your computer, you got to get rid of it first and foremost for your own salvation. Because it's basically a shrine to the devil that you've got now. And you're worshiping him when you engage in those things, whether you want to admit it or not, that's what's really happening. It's not a harmless thing. It's not a victimless crime or anything like that. It harms lots of people. Most importantly, for these purposes, you yourself. But secondarily, you're basically, you've planted a nuclear bomb that will go off if your son or daughter or both discovers this. And it will radically and maybe irretrievably alter your son's and daughter's perception of you as father if they discover your porn stash. Okay? So I want to warn you, if no one's ever told you this, I'm telling you now that you can wreak unimaginable devastation on the lives of your children, for which you will have to answer in due time, of course, let's not forget, if you do that. So if this describes you, if you're blushing right now, good, because maybe this is what God wanted you to hear this morning, and that is get rid of that stuff, get it out of your house, get it off of your phone, have nothing to do with it, and God forbid that your son or daughter or sons and daughters discover this, because all hell will break loose in their minds, and they may never tell you about it, and you don't want that, right? Okay, enough said. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Ann now in Toronto, Canada. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Patrick. Hello. I just have a little comment. Hi.
Sure.
My husband and I, we have seven daughters, and when our oldest daughter, she's 30 this year, okay, and now a mom herself, but when she was a little girl, I think she was about nine, she had some questions, and so we went to the park, and we went talking and walking, mm-hmm, and I gave her an explanation, of human sexuality, the way it works.
Right.
And I thought things were going very well because she was very quiet. And I asked, Teresa, do you have any questions? And she just started laughing and laughing and laughing till there was tears streaming down her little face. Mm-hmm. She thought that I was pranking her. She didn't believe me.
Hmm. How old was she?
No. About nine, eight or nine.
She thought you were pranking her. Like, she really did think that, or she was so taken aback she didn't know what to think?
No, she thought that I was just pulling her leg, that it was a joke, and now I was really going to explain it to her.
So did she not know any of what you had told her before, or did she already know it and she thought it was quaint that her mother was telling her things she already knew?
Oh, no, she didn't know. She knew that, God takes a little bit of mommy and a little bit of daddy. He blends them together, uh-huh, like colors, and then something new and wonderful comes, and mm-hmm, that's your little sisters, and that kind of stuff. But the actual, for want of a less crass, I guess, the plumbing details,
right?
She didn't have that information.
So once you told her, well, actually, I'm serious. I really meant it, and I'm really serious. How did she react to that?
She thought I was lying. She thought I was joking. She thought that was so preposterous.
Right. But what I mean is, once you told her, no, I'm not joking, it's not preposterous, that's real, did she, listen up, or did she still think it was a joke?
Oh, no. Yeah, she did. Okay. She eventually caught on to my serious tone. And we had many, many more talks, but unfortunately, the effect was so great that she went to her best friend, who is our goddaughter, and told her all the plumbing details. And I got a tearful phone call from that girl's mother who wanted to have that talk herself.
Oh, so was she angry that her daughter short-circuited her own intention to give her the talk?
Yeah, that my daughter did.
Yeah. And that's, that actually is a very good point that you raised there, Anne, for this reason. And that is that kids talk to each other. So pre-talk from mom or post-talk from mom, they will compare notes. They will talk to each other. So that's actually a good point. I'm glad you raised it. It's a good reminder that you should tell your child, not you personally, but, fathers and mothers, tell your children, this is private for you. This is private between you and me, not for your friends. This is private and important, so don't be talking about this to your friends. I'm really glad you added that.
Yeah, or your little sisters. Because, that happened too.
Guess what dad told me? What?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't want to do that. Yeah.
No, no. Well, she was our prototype, or like she was our test vehicle. And, you know, number 7 is now 17. So
you have done the talk, quote unquote, with all 7 of your daughters. Did any of the others react the way the first daughter did, or no?
No, not like that. Not like that. I think that they had some inkling, but none of them really had the whole picture, and none of them really, you know, didn't need the talk. And it wasn't the talk. It was many, 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 many talks over time, over years. And honestly, they're still now. I have a daughter in Ottawa, and she phones when her baby she clipped his nails and he had a little blister and she was really worried. Another daughter in Halifax, and she was calling for colic. And
so it's good that they have their mom at the ready to give them good advice on how to raise children and be good moms and all that. That's beautiful.
It is. It is. We're very blessed that way.
Well,
yeah.
God bless you, Anne, and your beautiful family. And any sons, or is it just the 7 daughters?
Just the 7 daughters, but...
It sounds funny to say it that way. Just 7 daughters. I mean, that's glorious to have
just
7 daughters. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It truly is. We have 2 grandsons that were both born this January.
Mm-hmm.
David.
Congratulations.
Thank you. In Ottawa, and Eamon in Halifax. And we also have Carolina, who's 3, and she, the little girl who did the belly laugh, she married a nice man from Brazil that she met at the University of Toronto.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she has Carolina now.
That's beautiful. Well, God has certainly blessed you, Anne, with so much life and goodness in your family. I'm glad you called in today. Thank you for that. Thank you. How about Nora now in Houston? Good morning, Nora.
Good morning. I just wanted to thank you so much for the topic that you're talking about. It reminds me of when it happened to me. I'm soon to be 64. And I recall being in the restroom crying because I had just found out that I was having my period, and I did not know what it was. It was just a surprise, and it wasn't pleasant. And so my uncle, who is younger than my mom, heard me in the restroom, asked me, you know, what's going on, this, that, and the other. And I explained to him, and he said, you know, it's just non-challenging. This is what's going on with you. This happens to girls. And and he goes to explain to me, and I'm thinking, no way. There is no such thing. And he's like, yeah, it is. Now you need to be careful because you can get pregnant and this, that, and the other. And so... thanks to him, I knew what it was. And it was, I was one of the first girls in my classroom that happened to. And like I said, I heard all the girls, you know, talking about it, but I was quiet to myself. I never told anybody this is what happens to anybody. Because I grew up in another country and I was in all girls school. Mm-hmm. And so it was something that you don't talk about.
Right. Did you grow up in Nicaragua by chance?
No, in Guatemala.
Not too far away. I kind of thought, but maybe by your accent.
Yes.
Well, that's good. And it's a great way to underscore the fact that we need people who are in the right position to share the truth with the kids when it's time, because we don't want them to get it from the wrong people. Right? That's true. Oh, I remember this song, Cyrus. Yeah, this is on the radio when I was a kid. I'm going to tell you something about this song, Cyrus. Interesting that you picked this one. I remember when I first heard the song, or at least when I first remember hearing the song, was in the back seat of the car. My mom and dad are up in the front seat of the car, and I'm trying to figure out, what is this song about? I was probably like 8 years old. Let's listen to the refrain here real quick. Coming up here and sing.
Let me tell you about this. Flowers and the trees and the moon.
I was utterly clueless. And I'm thinking, is this a song about insects and animals? And I, as I recall, maybe this is an invented memory, but I think I remember my mom and dad giving each other an amused look that I could see in the rearview mirror. That's my memory of this song. What a cute little song.
That's fun.
It's code, and the parents get it, but the kids don't. So, you want to go out to this? Oh, we have another. How long do we have?
45 seconds.
Okay, we'll stretch. So, who sings this version of the Birds and the Bees?
I have Jewel Atkins here. Birds and Bees, guess the year.
I'm going to guess 60, 61.
Oh, you're close. 65.
65. Yeah, I would have been five. I would have been clueless. I think Dean Martin did a version of this song, too. Okay, well, on that note, I think we had the talk just now, didn't we? I think we gave the talk.
Thanks, Dad.
You're welcome, son. Someday you'll be a man.